Welcome to Recovery Stories, Yukon and BC. This podcast aims to create a space for healing, understanding, and connection. Today on Recovery Stories, Kelly C. joins us. She is 35 years old, lives in Dawson City, Yukon. She's been sober since January 18th, 2021. And in this episode, Kelly shares a unique perspective influenced by a diagnosis of a rare liver disease. And while problematic drinking did not cause her illness, it did not aid her recovery. Her story delves into the feelings of immense shame and the challenges of adapting to a life without alcohol. Welcome, Kelly.
Hi. My story is a little bit different from most of the people you've had on the podcast. I think it can be really a familiar story to a lot of people, but it might look a little different from an outside perspective. Around COVID time, I started realizing that some of my drinking practices had gone beyond me. I had slipped down a slippery slope of staying out late and always having a drink in my hand to kind of participate in conversation. And it was bleeding into my personal life. It was bleeding into my relationship. I was waking up often, kind of trying to remember what I had said, feeling lots of shame or that I had overshared. I started looking into how I could maybe lose the power of alcohol, how I could lessen its power with me. Online, I found naltrexone, which is a drug that some people use. It's an opiate blocker, and it helps to release the dopamine fixes that you get from the euphoria of being drunk, which when you continuously use it, for some people, it can rewire the brain into not feeling that alcohol is something that you need to get that terms of happiness or that fix, that dopamine rush. And without white knuckling the experience, you can kind of train your mind in a different kind of way to not feel that alcohol is such this hold on you. So it's like you're drinking a tea. Once you have a tea, you don't want six more teas, you know? And so reframing your mind like that. I went to the doctor because this is something that a doctor needs to prescribe. I also had some, you know, female things where I had been missing my period a little bit and I wanted to kind of rectify what was going on there. During that process, the doctor took some blood work and we did an assessment course basically of how alcohol affects and impacts my life. And it was a series of 11 questions. It started with kind of something like, you know, since the first time that you had an alcoholic beverage, has your tolerance increased? Have you ever had, the hair of the dog the next day to kind of not feel the feelings of a hangover? Have you said or done things that you've regretted after a night of drinking? How many drinks do you have on average per day, per week, and whatnot? And by answering those really simple questions, it became extremely apparent to me that what I thought was normal and what the medical field thought as normal were two different worlds. And I could have probably said yes to not just me, but every single person around me. You know, Huda hasn't had a couple extra beers than when they were 16 years old and had their first beer, or however old you were when you had your first beer. You know, there's Caesars that are literally made to be the hangover cure. And all of this is kind of implemented in our culture. And we kind of never stop to think what that actually means. During that journey, the blood work came back and the doctor said that my enzymes were really high in my liver and that I would actually have to stop drinking because they had some strong concerns. So I went to the doctor to not white knuckle the experience, and then I came out being like, not only are you not getting that path, you now have to figure it out on your own, and sobriety is the only answer. And so I slowly prepared, and for a couple weeks I kind of allowed my drinking practices to be what they were, and I picked a date, and I decided it would be over because the doctor said it would. And it was kind of under the guise that at first, you know, maybe be about 6 months. They never really told me a time, but it, you know, it was not forever. It was just like, until we can figure out what's going on in your body, we want you to stop drinking. So I did that. And then as time went on, the medical stuff got way more serious, to the point where they went to the doctor one time and they were like, and I was like, oh, well, you know, is there a time where maybe I could have a beverage again? And they were like, no, this is the rest of your life. This is it. I'm not going to go into too much detail about the medical journey, but overnight, I went from thinking that I had some problems with drinking to being completely sober because medically I needed to be. And it took a really long time for them to figure out exactly what the reason was for the medical ailments. And during that process, there was so much shame that followed me because the medical field, my mind, my experiences made me feel like I had totally done this to myself. And I just felt so defeated that at 31 years old, that my life, I could never cheers a celebration for a glass of champagne again. I could never have, you know, a glass of wine and a cigarette when I was mad. I could never, you know, go to a wake and have a shot of Jameson's. It was all of those experiences just kind of got taken away from me overnight. And I had to rectify, basically, is my health worth it? Is fun times worth it? Are my friends worth it? It all just came kind of crashing in all at once. And the narrative with my specialist at the time was that, you know, some pretty big medical things were going to come down the path for me, being that I eventually will have to get a liver transplant. And as he's a liver specialist, the average person that he sees or needs a liver transplant, it's from extreme alcoholism. It's from abusing alcohol. And he was basically telling me that my liver looked like I had drank, like, you know, a bottle of vodka a day, which, you know, I had been drinking and it had become extremely pervasive, but contextually it didn't feel like that could happen in 20 years or whatever. The relationship didn't seem like that. And when I stopped drinking, there were so many people that were like, I never seen you drunk. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. You don't seem like you have a problem whatsoever. And it just felt so crazy to me that I would wake up in the morning just feeling so bad about myself and reliving so many moments of the night before. And I felt so alone in that journey. And then when people told me that, you know, they had never experienced me as being lush or being whatever, it just, those two feelings couldn't like coincide together. And it made me feel like I was the one that was broken. I couldn't handle it. I can go to a party and have a couple drinks and wake up the next day and have a good time about it. Like, I was always the problem. That's how it had always felt. And then I had a doctor telling me, you know, stop drinking. They basically pitched me after 6 months that I would have to go to a treatment facility because when you present to a transplant board, they want all of those check marks. They want to know that the liver that they're going to give you is going to somebody that's not going to abuse it. There's not so many to go around. It's a big medical procedure. Recovery is very difficult, and so they want you to be in a very good place. So it felt like, you know, my specialist had this checklist of what I needed to do in order to qualify for this very intense procedure. And the only way for me to do it was to go into a detox center, basically, and then a treatment facility. But at the time that he had pitched that, I'd been sober for 6 months. And so it infuriated me. It made me feel like, you know, when things were actually really hard and I was staying home every single night, I had emptied all the alcohol from my house, but that's all I could think of for like months. I could not. There were specific times of day and night where it infested my mind. And it was so hard to move through that. And then 6 months later, when I felt like I had finally kind of gotten a grasp on that I wasn't thinking about it anymore, and that I was kind of in this space where I was remapping what it felt like to be in relationships, what it felt like to go out to the bar, what it felt like to go to a party without having that crutch in my hand, they're saying, oh, you got to go to treatment. How dare I take a space for somebody that really requires this service? And what a dishonor is it to go to a space where people are sharing their intimate, deep stories about alcohol and the way that it's impacted, or drugs has impacted them. And I'm there just saying, I'm here just to get the check mark for my liver. It felt so like my emotional experience was not being considered whatsoever in these procedures. So that's how I got to sobriety. But for me, it's really hard to think of long term, because that's only one chapter for me. Eventually, within 10 years, I could say, that's kind of the discussion that seems to be on the board right now, they will remove my liver and put a new one in. And that's not a cure for the disease that I have. That's just a patchwork mediation. And there's a chance that I would need another liver after that. My journey has just begun. And so sobriety to me means a lot more than just the alcohol. It's my life. I never really identified with AA. It never really felt right to me, but the one thing that really did feel right was I read so many books and I listened to a million podcasts, and all I needed was just somebody else that kind of felt the same way as me, and they were speaking openly about how they would feel in the morning and, like, you know, peeling themselves out of bed and the pain and the hurt and the complexity of the entire thing. I needed to hear those words. I needed to hear those stories to feel like I wasn't alone. Because I think there's so many more people out there that struggle with what alcohol brings to their lives. But we don't have that open discussion. You know, I think a lot of people think that, oh, I'm going to only make a change if I lose my job or I lose my kids or I lose my partner. But that's a deep rock bottom. There are other levels that you can get off the elevator. Even in the last 5 years since I started sobriety, I feel like the conversation has shifted a lot in terms of what value, what type of life do you want to live? And I think you see that reflected in drinking patterns today. There's a lot more non-alcoholic beverages. It's become a strong industry. The newer generation, they're refraining from alcohol much more than previous generations. So there is like a little bit of a shift in that department. I think what you see on the outside and what is happening on the inside are two different worlds. I still work as a bartender. I did before I was sober for a lot of people, I think that that didn't make sense to them. You know, like, why participate in a world that you don't agree with all the time? And I don't know, for me, the way that I've viewed it is, sobriety is just one part of my kind of big life change over the last couple of years, and I don't want to change every aspect of my life. I like my job, and I think there's value in having somebody with a different mindset in a world where all you kind of see is alcohol. The ability to have conversations with people that are struggling in those moments, it's opened up a world for me, and I think a safe space for some people that I see constantly. So yeah, I work in that world. Sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's rewarding. But I think one of the words that would describe my story is deep shame. So much shame. And if there's one thing that sharing my story brings is that, you know, you're not the only one with that shame, that everyone has it, and it just shows up differently for some people. But more research that they do, there's more understanding about how the brain works during times of repetitive behavior. And I don't think it's your fault, you know? And I think people need to hear that more, that they didn't do something wrong to get to where they got to, that it's a slippery slope, and it's made with that kind of intention in mind. It's a dangerous drug that we as a society have accepted in every way, in every aspect of our life. And a lot of people don't like when I say this, but that's what a bar is. It's a safe injection site. And the more that we can name these things, the stigma can be released a little bit, and we can accept the parts that we want from it and reject the parts that we want. But you have to see the entire story for what it is before you're able to dissect it in that way. But yeah, no shame. I think that's the one thing that I realized was pure poison. More than the alcohol, it was the shame behind it.
Since you've quit drinking, what do you miss the most? And what are you most grateful to leave behind?
Definitely what I miss the most, because, you know, I'm quite young still, so there's a lot of partying that still kind of happens in my world. That feeling of kind of letting it all to the wind and kind of throwing it all away, I don't get that same kind of release as when I was drinking. Now that comes with, there's less highs, but there's way less lows. And so that baseline, you know, might sound or feel boring at the beginning, but as a long-term place to sit in, that's where a lot of my growth has come. But I have less moments where I feel like I need that feeling of throwing it all to the wind, because I feel like I'm in so much more in the driver's seat.
And do you find that people inquire with you what sobriety is like and are sober curious?
I think for me, part of my sobriety came at an interesting time in my friend group. A lot of my friends were starting to have kids around that time. So I think a lot of their lives kind of started shifting for different reasons. I was lucky in that sense. I also think because, you know, if you talk about a rock bottom or how long people kind of go on the elevator, I had a lot of relationships that were not just embedded in alcohol. There were like other pieces to those relationships. But yeah, it's definitely changed my relationships. But I don't feel like there's been immense loss in my relationships. But yeah, people are super sober curious, I would say. And I talk openly about my sobriety and how much I appreciate it. And yeah, like, I show up for everyone else around me way more. I just have way more capacity for everything. For myself, for the world, for people around me. And I get, yeah, for some people, like, you know, they don't want to quit completely because that seems really hard. And I totally respect those choices. But for me, it took up so much real estate in my mind when it came to, like, making rules around what was okay, how many drinks I could have, you know, am I drinking faster than everyone else? Am I drinking the same? Should I go take a shot without anyone knowing? You know, all of those questions, just that real estate is gone now. And it's available for things that actually matter for me. So yeah, just having that space and being present in that space with things that I truly value. There is light at the end of the tunnel. If that's the direction you want to go in, just know that, like, people have done it and you can maybe do it if that's what you want.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing today, Kelly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please reach out to our website at storiesytbc.com for supports in your area. Or if you'd like to share your story on this podcast, please email storiesytbc@gmail.com.